Trout Creek Pass looked mighty good to Preacher when he reached the trading post there 3 days later. One-Eye Avery Tuke spotted him first.
We heard you was looking for fellas to join a real ringtail mix-up, Preacher.
That I am, One-Eye. Philadelphia and me got ourselves in one hell of a fix up north in the Ferris Range.
Dupree stepped forward.
We learned some of it from Philadelphia, Preacher, but we would like to hear it from you.
Seems there's this fella about three beavers shy of a lodge who's took it in his mind that he's the Emperor of Rome. Build him a right accurate copy of the ancient town in this big valley in the Ferris Range.
Preacher went on to describe the highlights of the stay he and Philadelphia had endured. Through it all, only Bloody Hand Kruger maintained a skeptical expression.
That don't sound right. Why have one of us not seen this place in the 12 years you say it has been there?
Now how many pelts have you taken in the past dozen years, Bloody Hand? For that matter, how many of us has been in the Ferris Range at the same time? Now you listen to me. I seen all that with my own eyes, and so did Philadelphia and that young apprentice, Buck Sears. And that reminds me, if Buck ain't got a handle hung on him already, I reckon to call him Long Spear.
Is that for what I think it is, Preacher?
Oh, goddamn, Dupree, no it ain't. It's because he done some fierce fighting with one of them pilum things the Roman soldiers use in their army. Buck ain't near as good as some of us, but he's got sand, and he carries his own weight and then some. He learns quick, and we need every gun we can get for this fight with them crazy Romans.
Why would anyone live that way?
You know, now that's a question I ask myself a good many times. Don't seem that anyone at all with any brains worth counting would put up with the loco things this fella calls himself Marcus Quintus Americus expects of them. They dress in these outlandish clothes, all robes and nightshirt looking things, and they wear sandals too, like them brown robed friars come through the Big Empty back in 31. Hell, their soldiers even wear skirts.
I'm cold.
Terry looked at his sister, seated across the small fire from him.
So am I.
It'll be winter soon.
I know that. We've just got to find Preacher.
We could always go back.
No, we can't. We stole and lied to those folks. It wouldn't be fitting.
They'd understand, Terry. I'm cold and hungry and so tired. Why haven't we found Preacher yet?
I don't know. Leave it alone, will you? I'll tell you what. We'll wait it out 2 more days, keep going north. If we don't find Preacher by then, we can start back.
But I want to go back now. I'm scared out here, Terry.
All right. I'll take you back. At least until we're inside of the house. Then I'm heading for the trading post.
Over the next day, some 10 long-legged, rangy men clustered in the trading post compound. Well accustomed to the rigors of the high lonesome, they had heard the call for aid for a fella and dropped what they were working on and headed to the small settlement. To Preacher's surprised relief, that swelled their number to 35. Now, if only the Arapaho came in, they stood a chance. Amelia Witherspoon provided them pleasant distraction from the preparations for war. They sat under a huge juniper, redolent with the scent of resin and ripe berries. There had not yet been a sharp frost, so the small round balls had not turned their characteristic dark blue yet. Amelia had brought a picnic basket, and they lunched on cold fried chicken and boiled turnips.
I know that these people are simply awful, sinful, and terribly vicious. But isn't it up to our army to do something about them?
I ain't seen a soldier boy in nigh onto a year and more. They keep to their little blockhouse forts and ride the Santa Fe Trail to protect what folks back east call commerce. Now that Santa Fe and all New Mexico is American, business is booming. It's what the politicians will want the soldiers to guard. I hear there's even talk of opening a stagecoach line. Civilization gums up everything wherever it goes.
I'm not so sure. People are so much more tranquil in the East.
Controlled, you mean? I've been there. It's like one great big prison. Fella can't carry a shooting iron down the street without being gawked at or even arrested in some places. Folks that live like that ain't free.
But they're safe and protected.
Miss Amelia, I don't mean to pry or to offend, but that makes me wonder. If that's the case, And why in the hell did you folk come out here?
You have me there, Preacher. I could say it was our calling, or that adventure beckoned. Truth to tell, I suppose it was to be away from the strictures of society. Though when I think of the price to be paid, the terrible things that happened at Deacon Abercrombie and the others, all the blood spilled, and more to come, makes me question the purpose behind fighting those sick people out there.
Because it needs doing, Miss Amelia, and we're the only ones to do it.
The next day, a lone Arapaho warrior appeared at the gate to the compound. Preacher went out to greet him.
Yellow Hawk, it's good to see you.
Yellow Hawk returned Preacher's sign of greeting and made the one for peace.
It is good to see you, Ghost Wolf. We have come. There are 6 hands of warriors from the village of Bold Pony, and 4 hands from the village of the people who lost their braves to the Romans.
Damnation, you're talking 50 warriors. We number nearly as many. And more will be picked up on the trail. And maybe some of my Cheyenne friends would like to get in on this.
Yellow Hawk made a face. All was not love and roses between the Arapaho and the Cheyenne. But they had fought together before and perhaps would again. He signed acceptance. Preacher read the thoughts of Yellow Hawk on his stern visage. No matter, they would get along or not. The Cheyenne could always fight alongside the mountain men.
Bring them on. You can make camp outside the stockade. We leave tomorrow at first light.
A bit after mid-afternoon the next day, Preacher came upon a complication that left his jaw sagging.
What in the hell are you doing here, boy?
Saucy as ever, Terry Tucker stood at the side of the road, face just beaming, while he waved at the man he so admired.
I want to go with you, Preacher.
Now, we've been over this before. Where's your sister?
I took her back, then come to find you.
Back? That means the both of you runned off?
Yes, sir. We tried to find you north of here. Saw a lot of fellers dressed like you, but you didn't come along. Vicky got scared and tired, and so I took her back. I can come along, can't I?
No. Not only no, but hell no.
I want to join the fight. I can do it. You know that. I'm grateful to you for helping Vicky and me escape a life of crime, and I want to make amends. I can do odd jobs around the camp, care for the horses, that sort of thing.
Preacher removed his old slouch hat and scratched the crown of his head with a thick fingernail.
I swear I don't know what to do with you. It's more than dangerous where we're going. I've been there already once, and it ain't no pony ride. Still, I can't spare a man to return you, nor can I trust you to go on your own, given your goddamn stubborn outlook. So I reckon you'll have to come along.
Really? Oh, Preacher, thank you.
Preacher bent down toward the boy.
You'll not be thanking me 5 days from now when we run into them Romans. Now, you can't walk all the way. We gotta scare up a horse for you.
Why can't I ride with you?
I suppose we can make an exception this one time. At least until I can scare up another mount.
Preacher swung the boy aboard Thunder, noting that the improved victuals had added to Terry's weight. Messengers arrived at the palace from the watchtowers on a regular schedule.
Reporting from Watchtower 3, First Citizen. We've observed increased movement by the Red Savages to the east. All appear to be men, heavily armed, and moving to the south.
Do you have a count of them?
Yes, sir. They number approximately 36.
Not an exact figure.
We weren't about to send someone out to parley with them and count heads, sir.
No, of course not. Standing orders remain not to provoke the savages. I wonder where they are heading.
Some 10 miles out into the Great Divide Basin, Preacher's small army came upon the advanced scouts of the Cheyenne party seeking them. Some grumbling ran through the Arapaho warriors at this, though the 2 war party leaders, Yellow Hawk and Blind Beaver, kept their men in check. Crow Killer, leader of the Cheyenne, had been Preacher's age when he first met him. That had been over 20 years ago.
I thought you to be with the Great Spirit by now, Preacher.
You ain't no spring chicken yourself.
Have you grown as mean as you have old?
Damn right I have, and fit to wrestle the grizz. How you doing, Crow Killer?
I have a wife now, and 3 children. It has been a long time, Ghost Walker.
Sure as hell has. Too long.
We scout for you, Preacher?
Yeah, that'd be good.
We saw these people you go to fight.
Did you now? When was this?
3 suns ago. We rode past their Valley of Shining Lodges. They make ready to take the war trail. We have known it for some time. We did not know how evil these men are, so we left them alone. I will grow much honor fighting at your side.
The honor is mine. What can you tell me from what you saw?
They have built some platforms, like burial racks, put up on the ridge around their basin.
Watchtowers. You reckon they saw you?
Oh, yes. We did not try to hide.
That must have given old Marcus Quintus a tizzy, huh?
Who? I do not know that name.
The he-coon that runs that strange place. Injuns make him nervous.
Crow Killer scanned the ranks of Arapaho in his own Cheyenne.
Then he will soon be very nervous.
Early the next morning, Terry Tucker rode beside Preacher. Blind Beaver noted this and rode over himself.
You have son now too, Preacher?
Hell no, not likely. He's just, he's just something that growed to me.
I have two. One is 5 summers, the other one. The other is a girl, and she is beautiful.
I'm sure she is. When we make camp tonight, we'll hold council. Want to paint a word picture of how we'll attack these bad men.
It is good. Are they truly moon children?
I don't think so. Old Marcus Quintus might be a lot of touch, but he's sane enough to know right from wrong, and so do the others. I figure it this way. They're just letting themselves go. The pleasures the evil can offer can be mighty tempting.
Tell me about this boy.
Oh, he's a stray. Attached himself to me a while back, and I found a home for him and his sister. Now he's run off to help me in this fight.
You are young for your first war party.
I'm 12.
When I had 12 summers, I still used a boy's bow and hunted rabbits. You are brave. You will do well.
Just then, Crow Killer returned to the mixed column of mountain men and Indians at a gallop.
You weren't gone long.
There are many. I watched them. 2 of my scouts are behind them to give warning if more come.
That's wise. I'd as leave have half our men behind them, catch them in a box. How many?
5 2-hands and a hand more in 2.
You sure it's the Romans?
Yes, all on ponies.
Well, chances are 1 or 2 of them will get away from the fight that's sure to come. Wouldn't do for them to know us boys was out here. I hate to turn down a battle with those devils first off, but it's best if they think it's only Injuns. Bold Pony has some good men with a rifle. How about you?
I have 3 hands who are good at it.
Fine. 15 more rifles will sure help. I'll get the Arapaho ready, and you set up your warriors. Have them try to pop the leaders off first. This ain't for honor. It's for revenge.
That is how it will be done.
Good. Remember, no individual challenges or fights until the leaders are knocked out of the saddle.
After explaining his plan to Bold Pony, Preacher set about convincing the throng of mountain men.
I know this won't sit well with a lot of you, but we got to keep our intentions hidden from any of the Romans who get away.
Carl Kruger seized on that one.
What are you talking about?
There's about 55, 60 Roman cavalry on their way. The Indians are going to take them on. Chances are some of them's bound to get away. They can't take it back to New Rome that we have this larger force. Plain and simple. We hide over that ridge behind us until this thing is done. No exceptions.
Who appointed you, General?
I did. Now, we'd best get moving. Them boys in the red capos is not far away.
Preacher watched the Roman cavalry approach through his long brass spyglass. First to appear over the ridge that masked off the swale they had so recently occupied came the horsehair-plumed helmets and tossing heads of the mounts. The men showed up next. They rode at a canter uphill.
Stupid!
When the Romans reached the bottom of the reverse slope, the centurion in charge raised his hand in the universal signal to halt. Changing his field of view, Preacher saw the reason why. 12 Cheyenne warriors had risen out of the tall grass as though sprung new from the earth itself. They held drawn bows, the arrowheads angled high to reach for the enemy.
Clever.
Cheyenne loosed their arrows, and in an instant, 12 soldiers went down. The sergeant separated their squads from the square formation they had traveled in so far. But this only served to identify the leaders for the patient Cheyenne.
Idiot.
4 puffs of smoke rose from the surrounding grass, and each of the 4 heads of the cavalry fell from their saddle.
Really?
Left in confusion, soldiers milled about, their horses made fractious by the smell of blood. Then they were given something to concentrate upon. The meta came alive with Cheyenne and Arapaho warriors. Their horses snorted as they rolled upright and came to their hooves. The cavalry formation disintegrated through attrition, and the Arapaho and Cheyenne braves picked out individuals to challenge. One by one, the kilted fighting men of New Rome met death at the hands of the Indians. Only seven of them managed to keep their wits long enough to make an escape. During the next 2 days, 17 more denizens of the High Lonesome wandered in. The word had spread far and wide. Duke Morrison was among them 17, as was Bunny Tiltson and Haymaker Norris. The Duke approached Preacher during the noon and rest.
Hey, Preacher, are you serious about these
Romans? Oh, yeah. Yeah, them Romans is real enough. Did you check the trophies our Arapaho and Cheyenne allies collected off the cavalry?
No, but I'll have me a look.
Duke, you're pretty nigh expert at slipping and sliding around after dark, ain't you?
I've done my share of dark time stalking. You don't intend on sneaking up on these Romans, do you?
Yep, on some of them at least. Now that you're here, it comes to mind that we ought to do something about these outposts I hear the Romans done put up. And that's best done at night.
You're right on that, Preacher. When do we have a go at it?
Reckon you and me and a couple of Bold Ponies boys ought to pull out early tomorrow, get a day or so ahead of the rest. Then we can have a look around and see what can be done.
I say that shines. Count me in.
Shortly before nightfall, 2 days later, Preacher and Duke Morrison crested the notch that separated them from the New Rome Basin by but another valley and ridge. Careful to remain behind a screen of trees, they made a detailed study of the sawtooth line across the way. After a seemingly long 2 minutes, Preacher lowered his spyglass. He pointed at a shadowy object partially obscured by tree limbs.
That's a watchtower, right enough. I reckon they'll spread around so as to overlap a slight bit of the view from one to another. I count 6 men. Most likely there's some who's snoozing, and a couple who act as messengers.
I saw another tower. It looked to have the arms of one of those, whatchamacallits, you know, a signal thing.
A heliograph or something like it, huh?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that way they don't waste time sending a message, at least in daytime. The thing for us to do tonight is hit enough of these things to make being here plain uncomfortable. We want to get these boys all bollocksed up. Seeing things that ain't there, firing off reports and alarms to call out the soldiers at all hours.
That won't make the troops very happy.
Nope. And it'll make them careless, too. You remember from being a kid the story about the boy who cried wolf? Well, by the time our outfit gets here, that's what the regular soldiers will be thinking about these fellas on the ridge. And then maybe we'll pop up.
Preacher went on to outline his plan. They picked a spot on the far side and settled in amongst the pines to rest until the best time of night. Preacher and Duke gnawed on strips of jerky and cold biscuits to fill the empty space in their bellies, then caught a few hours of sleep. Elijah Morton didn't see the dark figures ghosting through the trees toward the watchtower. He had grown bored with staring into the black nothing. Opposite him, Gracchus peered toward the distant platform where two others did the same dull task. He sensed at the same time as Elijah the vibration of a footfall on the ladder leading upward. Gracchus walked over to investigate. Duke buried his tomahawk in the soldier's head. In the same instant, Preacher was all over Elijah.
You want to live, you keep quiet and do as you're told.
The head nodded feebly. Preacher went on.
How many are there up there?
Two.
Suddenly, pain erupted under his left ear and he felt the prick of a knife point.
Don't mind me. I counted 6 men earlier.
Preacher eased the pressure to allow for a reply.
4 are sleeping. There's the messenger down below. Didn't
you? He's tied up. What time's your relief?
I don't know. In another hour, maybe.
What's your name?
Elijah Morton.
You don't have a Roman name, Elijah?
Yeah. It's Virgo. I hate it.
All right, Elijah. You want to live? You're going to answer everything. Then we'll tie you up and gag you, but we won't kill you.
I'll do what I can.
Good. What's going on in New Rome?
Elijah talked freely about the preparations for war. He detailed the training exercises of the legions and the spoke of the firearms. That came as a nasty surprise to Preacher. They would have to hit at night, spike those cannon, and move right into the city. Somehow, the idea didn't sit well with him.
Anything else?
Oh, sure. The watchtowers were built, and we've been in them ever since. Once a week, we're supposed to be rotated back to our legion. So far, that hasn't happened, and we're getting fed up with it.
That's right, interesting. Well, we're gonna leave those other boys to snooze. Lock them in that room over there and wait to see what comes of that. I'm gonna turn you loose now. Don't fight me. You turn around, put your hands behind your back.
I hate this place. Can't I come with you?
No. We got more of this kind of thing to do. But if you want to ride away from it when you get loose, head due south. When you come to some folks, ask for Philadelphia Braddock.
I knew some Braddocks back home.
Where's that?
Philadelphia.
Ain't that interesting. Turn around.
Elijah complied in silence. After trussing him up, Preacher lowered Elijah to the platform floor. Then he and Duke eased over to the shelter that housed the slumbering sentries. Preacher located a loose piece of wood and used it to wedge the door tightly shut. With that accomplished, they stole off into the night to visit yet another tower. They completed their jaunt uneasily close to first light. A soft, silver-gray glow hung along the eastern ridge when they rejoined the Cheyennes. Both of them had big grins and 6 fresh scalps tied to their belts.
That ain't gonna do them Romans any good when they think about spending time out here. Might be we can raise a little more ruckus tomorrow night.
Considerable uproar followed Preacher's excursion. The 14 deaths were attributed to the Red Savages, and any who had been spared by Preacher and Duke kept their own counsel. It worked so well, Preacher decided, that they would try it on 2 or 3 of the other towers the next night. They had just crested the last ridge leading to Nova Roma. Suddenly, Preacher stopped dead in his tracks.
Oh, now that's a hell of a note. Looks like our funnin' with him has backfired on us.
Preacher referred to the neat rows of cook fires that spread around the meadow outside the walled city.
What's that?
That's a legion's, Duke. They've taken to the field. That's gonna change our plan somewhat, but that can wait until the rest get here. Now's the time to shake them up a bit more.
2 sentries guarded the base of the first tower Preacher and Duke approached. It took them only slightly greater stealth to close on the alert guards than it had the unsuspecting messengers of the previous night. No more sparing of lives. To create the maximum of fear and terror, all would die. It didn't make a problem for the Cheyenne, albeit he and Duke went to it grimly, taking no pleasure from the task. Slumbering messenger awakened in time to see the blade of a warhawk descending towards his head. The 2 mountain men ascended the ladder to the platform. Preacher topped the ladder first and rammed his green river into the diaphragm of the first guard. Duke hurled his tomahawk at the last guard.
Time to get moving.
The 2 men quickly descended the ladder. Preacher pointed at the small guard shack.
There's 2 more in there, most likely.
Duke nodded and they moved cat-footed to the door. Duke pointed to his chest, then the closed portal, indicating he would go through first. Preacher dipped his chin a fraction of an inch and yanked open the crudely made panel. Duke went through with Preacher at his heels. 1 guard slept in the corner. Duke moved quickly, unsheathing his big Hudson's Bay Company knife. The man's companion awoke at the sound. Preacher was there before the man could even cry out, tomahawk in hand. Cassius Varro stared into the night. He'd seen slight movement in Tower 7, but he decided it could only be the men on watch. Bored by long, fruitless hours of this static activity, he paced the 2 sides of the plank square for which he was responsible. Time went by so slowly. Pharaoh's eyelids had just started to droop when... Suddenly alert, Varro touched his partner on 1 shoulder, then leaned over the railing to call softly to the guards on the ground.
Titus! Vindex! What's going on?
Varro's answer came in the form of a broadhead arrow that drove into his forehead. Preacher ascended the ladder and had only to swing smoothly to smash the brains from the other sentry with his warhawk. Duke quickly joined him, and Preacher nodded to the tall black bulk of another tower standing out against the starlight.
Two down, one more to go.
At mid-morning the next day, the Mountain Man and Engine Army arrived beyond the Third Range from New Rome. Preacher and Duke greeted them and called for a parley of all leaders. Bold Pony, Blind Beaver, and Philadelphia attended. Terry Tucker hovered at Preacher's elbow. Most of the former fur trappers stood around in a loose circle. Their long lives of independence gave them license to eavesdrop, or so they believed. Having done it enough times himself, Preacher made no further notice of them.
Things has changed. We shook them up a little and put their legions out in the field. They's camped all around the city, so we'll not be scaling any walls right off. Put your men to making ladders for it anyway, though. We'll need them after we deal with the soldiers, I reckon.
How do we do that?
Preacher gave Philadelphia a smile.
I thought you'd never ask. First thing we gotta do is draw them out. I see you brought along a couple dozen more than we had at our last camp together. That's good.
We're more than 150 strong now, Preacher. And that could get bigger by tomorrow.
Even better. All right. Cold camp tonight. We don't want our Roman friends knowing we're here. I know it'll be hard not getting in some drumming and singing, Bold Pony and Blind Beaver, but you've both done some war trail sneaks before, I'm sure. We can all dance up a hell of a storm once this is all over.
The war leaders nodded solemnly.
Now here's how we get them to come to us. First off, we have to get rid of all those watchtowers they built. Then, the morning after that's done, we show up in a double line on that last ridge with the Cheyenne.
What about the Arapaho? You going soft on them for a purpose?
No, goddammit, Kruger, not at all. Matter of fact, they got the hardest part of it all. Before we show ourselves to the Romans, they gotta sneak down into that valley during the night.
Preacher went on to describe where the Arapaho warriors would go and what they'd be doing.
Sounds complicated.
It ain't. Not if everyone does what he's supposed to. If all of us keeps our place and not act on our own, we can have this over before nightfall.
You said they had cannons.
Now, those we take care of the same time we empty the watchtowers. Oh, that reminds me. Duke and me learned a whole lot about how they run. After the soldiers are taken care of, we leave two men in each tower to make the morning signal. Then those boys can join the rest of us. As far as the cannons go, I found these little things in one of the towers we hit last night. Must be used for holding something together. Thing is, they'll serve our purpose.
Preacher unwound from his squat on the ground and went to his saddlebags. From them, he took a buckskin bag about 6 inches long, and from it, he removed three dull grayish objects. They had been flattened on one end, and the opposite one tapered to a fine point. He raised his arm to show them around.
While the towers are being silenced, Duke and me and a couple of others will slip in among the Romans and spike the touch holes of those big guns.
That didn't sound too good to Philadelphia.
Did they hear you doing that?
Not if we use padded wooden mallets. A couple of pops on each one, then break them off. Those tired soldier boys will think it's just horses stomping in the night.
If you say so.
I want to go with you, Preacher.
No, Terry. You stay on the ridge with them towers, and that's final.
When do we get all this started?
Preacher swept his arm in an inclusive gesture.
We'll get us a little rest now. Then when it's good and dark tonight, it begins. Them Romans will never know what hit them.
Prudence, as much as good luck, guarded Preacher and the five mountain men with him as they glided across the tall grass of the central meadow. For some reason, the cannons had been left outside the temporary palisades of the nightly encampments of each cohort. He had no way of knowing that the cause was ignorance and laziness. 12-pound Napoleons weigh over a ton, and they were hard to move around. The generals had decided where they would fight the enemy when he came, so the long guns had been laid to provide the maximum effect. There they would stay. Coincidentally, that put three cannon on each flank of the supposed Roman main line of resistance. Well and good, Preacher figured. Shortly before sundown, Haymaker Norris, who claimed to have put his trappings aside for 2 years to serve in the Mexican War as an artilleryman, instructed the sabotage party in the proper way to spike a cannon. Along with the mountain men who were to take out the watchtowers, they set out on foot at midnight. Leaving a cold camp, Their night vision was not affected in the least. Those who used tobacco chewed on sweetened leaf or, like Preacher, chomped on the butt of an unlighted cigar. They moved with astonishing speed and silence. No one spoke. Not a loose item of equipment or clothing clattered or rattled. Not even a clink came from the Roman plumb bobs, for that's what the lead spikes were identified as by Four Eyes Finney, who had been an apprentice carpenter before he ran away to the Big Empty. When Preacher and his companions reached the watchtower beside the main southern trail, not a living person remained there. The other force of mountain men had done their work well and vanished into the night to their next objective. Preacher raised his hand to signal a halt.
We'll take the cannons on the right flank first.
They began their descent 5 minutes later. Avoiding the roadway in order not to be seen, the mountain men angled across the basin through the tall grass, nearly invisible even to one another. Preacher's long, meticulous survey of the valley paid off. He had a fairly accurate map of the terrain in his head. It took not the least effort to direct the spiking party to a wide, deep ravine that cut diagonally across to the Roman right flank. 5 minutes after 3 a.m, they arrived at their objective, the perfect hour when the rhythm of human life ebbed lowest. It was the time of deepest sleep, when dreams formed and the body became sodden with relaxation. Some called it the hour of the wolf. Working two to each gun, the mountain men placed the spikes, then rapped on them with padded mallets. Preacher had insisted that they not strike together or too rapidly. His precaution paid unexpected dividends. When the last spike had been broken off, they entered a small gully on hands and knees. The small group reached the second trio of cannon without incident. Preacher squared off on the flattened top of a lead plumb bob and gave it a whack. He suddenly realized he was sweating bullets. Too much of this could take years off a fella's life. He tugged at the spike to check it set, then hit it on the shaft. It bent, but did not break off.
Oh, shit.
Preacher didn't dare risk another hit. He raised his hand to signal the others, and they stole off into the darkness, their task completed. Preacher's small party and those who had attacked the watchtowers around the rim waited out the rest of the night on the intermediate ridge. Their horses would be brought up to them. Elated and relieved that they had encountered no difficulties in the night's activities, Preacher chose to spend his weight on a good snooze. He reckoned as how he would need every bit of alertness and stamina he could recover during the day to come. An hour before dawn, the main force arrived. Preacher roused himself to speak with the leaders.
Yellowhawk, I want you and your warriors to take your place where I told you now. Have them keep low and be damn quiet. They must stay completely out of sight until I give the signal.
Preacher had brought along 6 fat, greasy, paper-wrapped sticks of blasting powder from the trading post. He had caps and fuse for them in his saddlebag. Some would be used to distract and confuse the enemy or blow down the gates to the city. The first one would be to signal the Arapaho to attack.
Have them take plenty of water gourds, too. Wouldn't do for him to get too thirsty to fight proper.
Yellowhawk nodded his understanding.
You have fought many more battles than I, Ghost Wolf. It is good to have wise counsel. Only one thing worries me. That we are not to fight in the open, pick our enemy and count coup before we slay him and go for another. We have never fought this way before.
Let's hope you never have to again. But this time, it's important. The way the Romans fight makes it so. Now, go on ahead and put the braves in the right places.
Preacher turned his attention to the others.
Philadelphia, you lead our boys into this fracas. I'll be quartering the field between you and the Cheyenne. It's gonna be pure hell to keep them dog soldiers from breaking ranks and counting coup before we can spring the trap. So I'll mostly be with them.
Think they'll listen to you?
Well, they better if they want to stay alive. In the right hands, them javelins have might near the range of a Cheyenne arrow. They ain't like a head-heavy flint lance point. Timing. Everything in this counts on timing. We're outnumbered sure as hell, but if we do this right, there won't be enough Roman soldiers left to form one of those, what do you call them 10-man outfits?
Conobumium.
Yeah, one of them.
Buck Sears scratched his head.
You seem so sure of this, Preacher. Did you learn it from some army fella?
I'll tell you about it later, Buck. Right now, I want to go convince Blind Beaver to keep a lid on his men.
Before Preacher could do that, he had one more task to complete. He squatted before Terry and put a big, hard hand on one slim shoulder.
You do right like I said. You stay on this ridge tomorrow. Don't you move a muscle.
Shortly after the sun rose two fingers over the eastern rim of the valley, the mountain man and engine army crested the ridge to the south. Not a signal went out to announce their arrival. Below, in the camps of the legions, the soldiers went about their morning fatigue duties of taking down the stockades and tents. The approaching host had ridden halfway down the reverse slope when someone first noticed them. Quickly, the Roman men scrambled to their weapons. Tent mates helped one another into their breastplates and greaves. NCOs brought order to the ranks, which formed in the traditional Roman squares. Lastly, the legates of the legions appeared, dashing on their powerful chargers, cavalry legions of Varus swinging into the traditional position in the order of battle. The enemy rode inexorably closer. At about 2,000 yards, their double line began to change shape. The flanks, two ranks deep, curved inward, while the middle, consisting of three ranks, hung back slightly. When they had molded into a bison horn formation, they halted. Curious eyes studied the so-called barbarians. Equally curious eyes took in the box-like formations of the legions from the other side. Squinty Williams nudged Philadelphia in the ribs.
What they all bunched up like that for? They just asking for a shower, Cheyenne arrows.
We'll find out soon enough, I reckon, Squinty. According to Preacher, the old-timey Romans were real mean fighters. Whooped everybody they went against.
Well, they didn't ever come up against us fellas, I bet.
No, Squinty, I don't guess they did.
In full regalia, the Roman legions began to march forward like a single man, rather than nearly 900. Marcus Quintus Americus gazed over the ranks of his brave legions. Pride swelled his heart. They were ready. They surely were honed as fine as any soldiers could be. They had about 1,000 stadia to cover, and then the cannons would open up. The legions had heard them fire enough not to falter when they blasted away. And then the cohorts would pick up the pace to a trot. Piles slanted forward at eye level to these unprotected barbarians. Riflemen would open up at the same time. And he figured it would all be over soon enough that he could be back in the palace for a soothing bath and a light lunch. At least it would blood the legions, which they needed anyway. Knowledge of New Rome would undoubtedly become widespread outside the valley. Secrecy couldn't be maintained forever.
The cannon had been spiked! The cannon are useless!
What?
No. No! Everything hinges on the artillery!
Quintus looked about him in serious despair. He had to act. He had to do something. And it had to be right. It wouldn't do to start off with all this fanfare and then retreat in the face of a determined, if small, hostile force. There couldn't be more than 150 of them. Marcus Quintus turned to the trumpeter beside him.
Sound for the legates!
At once, Glaubii, Bruno, and Varus turned the heads of their mounts and cantered to the center. They saluted formally.
Somehow, those barbarians had the wit to infiltrate our encampment and spike the cannons. That places the burden of victory more directly upon your soldiers. We will advance within range of our archers in Pylae. The cavalry is to divide and take positions to sweep those thin flanks back on the main body.
First citizen, I recommend against splitting my force.
Why?
Quintus glared directly into the eyes of Varus.
Given a good shower of arrows and javelins, these unarmored louts will break ranks and flee. You will be able to slaughter them at your leisure.
Need I remind you that they all have guns? Them and most of the red savages.
Savages cannot hit what they shoot at. See that it is done as I have said. I will take the center in my chariot.
Quintus climbed to the platform of the gold-chased chariot. There he drew a silver inlay gladius and held it at the ready. Disgruntled, but keeping their tongue silent, the legates of the three legions of New Rome rode back to their commands. There they conveyed the orders of their supreme commander, and the cavalry departed for the flanks of the mountain man formation. When they had reached the desired location, Quintus raised his sword.
Troops, forward!
They came on until a distance of only 50 yards separated them from the invaders. Philadelphia cast a weary eye at the ranks of advancing soldiers.
Now, ain't that obliging of them to come in so close?
Sure enough is. Steady on, boys!
The Romans halted their march, still remaining in perfect formation.
Nisi abesus!
Roman soldiers let loose a hail of arrows and javelins. Unlike the static squares of the Roman soldiers, the Mountain Men and Cheyenne allies were free to move at will, which they did by simply jumping their horses forward enough to be missed by the missile. A split second after recovering from the movement, Preacher's band fired. Bullets punched right through bullhide shields. Even the brass ornaments on them yielded to 56 caliber lead balls. Preacher took aim at a fancy dude in a glittery uniform who seemed to be in command. Preacher's slug shattered the breastbone of Yancey Taggart and ended the career of General Gaius Septimus Glabii. At such short range, not a one of the Mountain Men and Indians could miss. 157 Roman soldiers went down in that first volley. Marcus Quintus Americus stared on in horror as he saw Glabii, a senior general, slain with casual indifference. Another flight of arrows and javelins answered the fire, only to be avoided while men rapidly reloaded. The air turned blue with powder smoke once again. Preacher made quick note that the discipline of the troops they faced had begun to falter. With a little luck, he might not even need to use the Arapahoes. He drew a .44 Walker Colt, and the Mountain Men around him went to pistols too. The rapid fire had a withering effect on the legions. It had even more on the fancy-dressed fellow in the two-wheeled cart. That one, it must be Marcus Quintus, Preacher figured, signaled wildly, and the Romans began to withdraw, marching backward. Long rows of leveled javelins pointed at the men whom they left in command of the field.
Well, that don't beat all. I don't know what to make of that.
Me neither. A fella gets himself all worked up for a fight like they did, it usually lasts a spell. They sure as the devil had us outnumbered.
They may be back. Best pulls back away and stand fast. I marked that Quintus fellow to be a tricky bastard.
Quintus ordered his chariot to get around the formation of troops. He wondered why his own riflemen hadn't fired, then recalled that he himself had assigned them to cover the cavalry, which as yet had not engaged the enemy. Another thought struck him. He needed a replacement for Gaius Septimus, and that would be Rufus Longinus of the Second. He had almost as much knowledge of military matters as Glabii had possessed. Bruno could just get himself a new Primus Pilus. Marcus Quintus wanted to be calmed and refreshed when he met with his generals to promote the man and offer advice. He told himself that tomorrow would be a far better day. Four Eyes Finney seemed mightily pleased with himself.
He who hits and runs away...
He's a yellow-bellied cur.
No, that ain't it, Lonesome. It's about living to fight another day.
Why'd they run? Why didn't we just finish them off here and now?
I tell you what, Jack. We got them whittled down some, and it's for certain sure those cannons don't work. But there's at least five of them for each one of us. Let's say we pull back to the base of the ridge and settle in. They're gonna do something before long.
Preacher turned out to be right about that. An hour later, three officers, one with a white flag, rode out from the Roman camp. With them came a number of soldiers and a line of wagons. The one with the truce flag advanced to where the Mountain Men lolled on the ground, eating and sharing some scarce whiskey.
Which one of you is the general in charge?
Preacher came to his boots and tucked the stick of jerky he'd been gnawing on in a shirt pocket.
I reckon that'd be me, but I ain't no general.
What do you call yourself?
Folks around these parts call me Preacher.
By Jupiter and all the gods! Gaius told us you were the one we saw fight in the arena.
No one but you could have made good on that escape.
You come here to flatter me, did you?
We came to ask permission to recover our dead and wounded.
Help yourselves. We got no quarrel with them.
But you do with us.
Something like that. There's those amongst us who don't take kindly to having our friends made into slaves and forced to fight to the goddamn death.
What's wrong with that? It's a good way for a barbarian to make a living.
You keep that up, and you'll be joining those you came to get.
Sir, we are under a flag of truce.
Preacher reached up and yanked that white flag from the astonished general's hands.
Funny. I don't see a goddamn thing you're under.
Let's, get on with it, shall we?
You can come back for this rag when you're done. Preacher turned to the others. We just gonna have to do something about that kind of rudeness.
By the time the dead and wounded had been retrieved from the field, darkness hovered on the ridge to the east. Westward, magenta and gold washed over the pale blue of the sky. Preacher had men busy making objects from the thorns taken from the underbrush and rawhide strips. While they worked, he went among them.
When it gets good and dark, we're going to take these things out and scatter them in front of those little movable forts of theirs. Really sowed the ground with them. Then some of us is going to pay a visit to the big city.
If we get past those soldiers.
We don't, Kruger. You'll be with the others spreading these here counters. Horses don't like them much and men don't neither. Messes up their walking right smart. I'm going to pick those that are going, then everyone get a good meal. We'll start out at midnight.
True to his word, Preacher led an expedition out from the camp at midnight. He and 11 others would penetrate into the city and cause what havoc they could contrive. Another party, under charge of Philadelphia Braddock, set off to scatter the deadly four-point caltrops in the tall grass outside the Roman camps. Preacher's picks had smeared soot and grease on their faces, and all wore dark clothing. They had a variety of flopped hats and animal skin caps to break up the regularity of the shapes of their heads. All carried pistols and knives, a few tomahawks. Rifles would only hamper them. At Preacher's direction, fire pit trestles had been heated and one end of each bent into a hook. Ropes had been attached and knots tied along their length. Preacher had remained secretive about the purpose of these. When they reached the walls, the fires burned low behind the palisades and everything lay in silence. Preacher wrapped his hook in cloth and shook out a length of rope. He gave it a steady swing, moving his hand and arm faster with each circle. The hook sailed over the wall and stuck fast when Preacher pulled on the rope. Quickly, the others with hooks began to throw him at the battlement. When the sixth one caught, Preacher leaned back and went up his hand over hand, feet braced against the outside of the rampart. More men quickly followed until all 12 had scaled the barrier.
We're here, and now what? I'd say a visit to the bath, Squinty.
Well, I done took my summer bath.
No, what I had in mind was breaking a few things in there and flooding the streets. You won't even have to take off those ripe-smelling moccasins.
Don't you be doing that to me, Preacher. I have to swim for it if you break this place apart.
Not if you run fast enough. Let's go.
The 12-man party made it to the baths without the Vigili spotting them. Inside, they easily subdued the night watchmen and spread out through the series of pool rooms. Buck Sears led the way to the confluence of the underground waterways. There, they plied crowbars and mauls to break the plaster away and penetrate the brick walls. No time after that, they were walking ankle deep in swift flowing water, spread through the baths, headed for the front door. Preacher quickly directed the men to split up into pairs and go do some mischief.
Keep a sharp eye for those watchers.
Preacher and Squinty headed for the central square, the forum.
What are we going to do there?
We're going to wake up some ladies and scare them out of their nightshirts.
Squinty cocked his head and then shook it.
You actually thinking about dallying with some women in a place as dangerous as this?
Hell no. I'm talking about scaring the Vestal virgins of mine. Stir up some hullabaloo.
Virgins?
Oh, now don't get your hopes up. Some of them been virgins so long they likely got cobwebs down under.
Portia Andromeda awakened to something that she had not believed possible. A man in the cloisters of the Temple of Vesta. Not only a man, but a brute ugly one at that. He had a hairy face and gaps in his teeth, which were too dark to be healthy, and his eyes were too close together and they kind of squinched up.
What are you gawking at, you ugly old prune?
Get out of this room!
How about a little kiss first, sister?
Oh!
When Portia again opened her eyes, the man had disappeared. Preacher and Squinty quickly headed away from the cloisters.
Where we headed now?
To the gladiator school.
You're joshing me, ain't you?
Nope. I told Buck and the others to meet us there.
What do you want to go there for?
It's simple, Squinty. There's bound to be about 50 highly trained fighting men locked up in there. We're going to let them out. If they want to join us, they'll be welcome.
No, we need more on our side right now. Only, what if they want to stay right there and are willing to fight to do it?
We leave those locked up. Down that street there, the Via Julius.
Fires had drawn all of the watch away from seeking those who had started. 12 mountain men reached the gladiator school within 5 minutes of one another.
We gotta do this quick-like. Go in, free the ones who want to come with us, and get out. Then it's for the walls.
Preacher was the first one in, and he saw two guards standing by the door.
Hey, fellas, watch what I can do.
Preacher stripped one of the dead men of a set of keys, quickly moved to the cell doors, opened each one as he went.
Is there anybody here who wants to stay and die for these crazy bastards?
Not a single man raised a hand, or even looked like they were about to.
Well, all right then. There's all sorts of firearms in the storage room I'll show you in the House of Baldwin.
Preacher and Buck set out to lead the way. The noise in the streets had awakened Bulbus. He looked wistfully at the trim posterior of the young slave girl in his bed, gave the bare buttocks a pat, and climbed from his bedclothes. Once fully dressed, he headed for the atrium. He got there at the same time the mountain men swarmed into the central courtyard guard. Swords and javelins proved no hindrance to the blaze and pistols of the wild and woolly men of the High Lonesome. They brought down the five guards in as many seconds and surged toward the stores.
No!
Suddenly angry beyond any vestige of fear, Bulbus went for him with a gladius flashing in his pudgy hand. The preacher turned in time to see the blade poised to strike his head from his shoulder. Bulbus stumbled toward the fountain in the center of his atrium. He pitched over the lip of the basin.
Right through there, men. Pick the best weapons you can find. There's plenty of them. Bring along all the powder shot and caps you can haul. We have to beat these Roman Mongols back to the wall.
Preacher soon found that they had lost the race to the parapets. Helmeted soldiers lined the southern and western ones. He veered his much larger band into a darkened street and plunged along it toward the east wall. Only a dozen men topped that bastion when they reached it. The defenders pitched head first off the parapet or lay where they had fallen. Preacher led the way up the steps.
Too bad we didn't get back to our ropes. We'll have to go back down and get out through that little bitty gate.
Can't make
it. I say we can, Squinty. Now get moving.
With trusted mountain men to serve as rear guard, Preacher started the free gladiators through the low, narrow gate toward the outside.
Keep damn quiet and stay close to the base of the wall.
Nearly half of the escapees had disappeared into the tunnel-like passage through the thick base of the stone rampart. When suddenly, some 16 of the Bajilli rounded the corner nearest the portal and stopped abruptly. These watchmen carried javelins in addition to their swords. Made edgy by the sudden uproar within their city, so far unable to account for it, the men of the watch reacted quickly. They all rocked back and each hurled a pile. A javelin shot past the left ear of Preacher, even as he drew his left-hand walker Colt. In such an unfair contest, there could be no doubt of the outcome. Unfortunately, the battle served to announce the presence of the invaders to those on the walls. Preacher looked up to see the walls swarming with guards, each with a javelin poised for attack.
Move it, Preacher!
Preacher turned and quickly dove through the small portal. He was the last one through. Preacher and the small group ran as fast as they could. Behind them, the sky glowed orange from the fires in the buildings and gardens of New Rome. Now all he and his men needed to do was get past the Legion camps and safely back to the ridge. Yeah, that was all. Once again, daylight found the legions drawn up outside the bastions of New Rome. They formed their battle squares and began a slow, stately advance toward the distant collection of what Marcus Quintus Americus referred to as rabble, gutter-born barbarians. Like before, those he held in such disdain spread out in a long double line and came forward. Following their strategy of the previous day, they deployed into a bison horn formation. Only this time, they were nearly 50 stronger. All was not well in New Rome. The turmoil of the past night had left deep marks on many. The senior Vestal Virgin and the chief priests of Jupiter and Mars had argued against resuming the battle so soon. They insisted the Dawn Auguries had foretold misfortune. One of the doves had been missing a heart, and the sheep had a large tumor on its liver. Furious at the insult handed him by the barbarians within his own walls, Marcus Quintus Americus scoffed at the omens for the first time since he had begun his childhood animal sacrifices at age 10. He ordered the legions forward. Although still deprived of his cannons, the process of clearing the touch holes long and tedious and requiring precision, he went forth with high expectations. The forces of New Rome still outnumbered the enemy by better than 5-1. He sent the infantry against the center of the enemy line, now three ranks deep. His riflemen opened fire first. He had included a number of them with the infantry this time. Poorly trained at best, they had little effect beyond causing a few of the scruffily dressed barbarians to duck with exaggerated motions.
The legions will roll over this ragtag collection like a giant wave.
When you get to 100 yards, open up on them.
Obediently, the mountain men raised their rifles and took aim. They waited until the heads of the first line of soldiers rested in the buckhorn rear sights of their long guns. The first rank knelt to reload while the second stepped up. Down went a third of the band and one centurion behind him. The range had closed to 75 yards. The third rank got in line. By then, the first rank had reloaded and stepped forward again. At 50 yards, the first flight of arrows flew from the Roman square. The mountain men gave up on their rifles and raised their handguns. But the Roman enemy kept on coming.
Hold fast! Just a little longer now! Watch out for them spears!
A flight of javelins seethed through the blue morning, only to strike grass and turf. The shield wall of the Romans had closed to within 20 feet. Spear tips darted like the tongue of a rattler, probed everything before. 30 more soldiers fell, but still they came on. The preacher emptied one Colt 6-gun and drew the other. Soon now, he eased up a stick of blasting powder from behind his belt and made sure it would come free easily. The legionnaires closed the remaining distance, and their spears darted to find the soft spots of many of the ex-gladiators. From his vantage point, Marcus Quintus could not help but smile widely. His attack was working perfectly. The Cheyenne savages wavered and began to give ground. Soon the entire middle did the same. Menaced by the darting blades of the legionnaires, they appeared to have entirely lost their nerve. Quintus pointed out the faltering lines to Rufus Longinus.
Do you see? The savages flee in disorder from my magnificent legionnaires. They won't last long now.
Inexorably, the Roman center was drawn deeper inside the tips of the horns, something which held not the least significance for Marcus Quintus. His chest swelled with pride as he saw for the first time a litter of barbarian and injured bodies on the ground, rather than only his own soldiers. Aware now that the one commanding his enemies was a living legend preacher, Marcus Quintus took extreme pleasure from watching the destruction of the invaders.
Longinus, send a messenger to Varus. Have his cavalry sweep the field obliquely. They are to get around behind the enemy and prevent any escapes.
The man nodded to Quintus. Privately, Rufus did not like this the least bit. The evolution of the battle plan had an all too familiar appearance. Something they had studied at West Point, he recalled, back in another lifetime. But he couldn't put his finger on the engagement or its outcome. Stubbornly, the three ranks, minus the engines, continued to hold, though now bowed in slightly. Then the cavalry began their charge. They had ridden only a few lengths, enough to be within the limits of the horns, when the buckskin-clad preacher raised his arm and arched his body sharply. He hurled an object with all his strength. Dynamite exploded a foot off the ground and disintegrated four legionnaires. A dozen more received injuries. Then, the Arapaho, who had been hidden in a deep ravine to the left rear of the battle formations, rose up and fell upon the horsemen at the backs of the advancing cohorts. With the roar of the explosion fresh in their ears, the mountain men steadied their line as the Arapaho seemed to materialize out of the very ground. The Cheyenne turned back to face the enemy. The preacher lit another stick of dynamite and hurled it towards the center of one of the Roman formations.
Let it rip!
The tight, disciplined Roman formations dissolved into swirling masses of men, desperately engaged in hand-to-hand fight. A terrible slaughter began. The conflict lasted for hours as the Arapaho and Cheyenne took revenge for their murdered brothers. Reduced to tomahawks and big, wide-bladed fighting knives, the mountain men hewed through the struggling legionnaires with deadly accuracy. The scent of blood thickened the air in a cloying, coppery miasma. Unremittingly, the numbers diminished for the Romans. Preacher's men were able to fall back and take time to reload pistols. Their addition to the fray took a brutal toll. At last, the draggled survivors among the legion broke off and fled the field for the imagined safety of New Rome.
Hold back now! We gotta get organized and then we go after them. I want to tally how many we have fit to fight.
Subordinate leaders appointed by a preacher and the war chiefs of Arapaho and Cheyenne made quick head counts. Turned out that only 40 had been killed, less than the number who had joined from the gladiator school. Another 60 had been wounded, ranging from serious to cuts and scrapes. That left Preacher mightily pleased. Blue-nosed Herkimer swaggered up to Preacher, who was cleaning his revolvers and hawking rifle with little Terry Tucker standing proudly at his side. Herkimer had a big smile plastered on his face. He clapped Preacher on one shoulder.
That was sure something, I'll declare. Never seen the like. How come those fellas was so dumb as to fall for it?
They failed to scout the battlefield, and I reckon they never had much use for fights fought a long ways off.
Well, how's that? And, more to the point, how'd you know what to do and that it would work?
Little reading I did a while back about a feller named Hannibal and the Battle of Cannae.